Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
You're very welcome back. 33 minutes on the clock. No score yet between Belgium and Japan in tonight's evening game. We'll have plenty on the football show on all today's football later on. Tim Vickery will join us, as will Pat Nevin. But we're turning to cycling first. The Tour de France starts on Saturday and Chris Froome will be there. He's been cleared of any wrongdoing by the UCI this afternoon, and so he will go freely in search of his fifth Tour title, his third Grand Tour win in a row as well. This situation has obviously been dragging on since late last year when Froome returned an adverse test. Effectively, he had doubled the permitted dose of the asthma drug salbutamol in his system. So to explain all, we have a regular guest on the show, Dr. Ross Tucker, on the line. You're there, Ross?
I'm here. How are you?
Very good. So, well, it's been a busy 24 hours in this story after this thing dragging on for quite some time anyway. Just yesterday, the news broke that the tour organisers were seeking to block Froome from riding, which seemed like a very interesting development. And now here we are. The UCI say, in light of WADA's unparalleled access to information and authorship of the salbutamol regime, the UCI has decided, based on WADA's position, to close the proceedings against Mr. Froome. So, a short version here, UCI have said WADA are happy, therefore we're happy. That's kind of where we are today.
Kind of. The most telling bit in what you just read there was the part about WADA being the authors of the policy. Because what's happened here is that they've obviously set this limit for salbutamol. So most listeners will be aware that you're allowed to have some salbutamol in your system, but not too much. And there's a line that they've drawn, and it was 1,000 nanograms per mil. And what that line betrays is that WADA was basically asked to defend that line, and they couldn't do it. And so they were presented with so much evidence and so much scientific research that effectively put the burden back on them to defend that line is a legitimate and fair and robust way to exclude people or not based on anti-doping policy. And WADA effectively have said, we simply cannot defend our own policy, therefore we're closing proceedings. And that, I mean, anyone who hears that makes a mockery of anti-doping policy, certainly for salbutamol, and I believe with wider implications for other drugs also.
And why would they not be able to defend their line that they've picked, their 1,000?
Because the principle there is that you can't measure what the guy takes. He's allowed to use his inhaler, and he's allowed to use it up to a certain amount. But you cannot measure the input, and so therefore you measure the output. But that output is a function of so many other complex interactions. And so two people taking the same dosage might produce different levels in the urine, and the same person taking even slightly different dosages might differ from one day to the next. And so because they can't stand with absolute confidence behind their own upper limit, they can't then sanction a person on the basis of it, because they're effectively saying, what if there's a false positive? Mm-hmm. And because we can't absolutely confirm this, and because there is enough doubt that has been portrayed and created by the legal team and by Froome's case, we have to then say that his adverse finding is actually, in fact, not an adverse finding, and he's free to ride. So it really does undermine the credibility of the process, because it says pretty loudly that the evidence base for the anti-doping policy in this instance is not strong enough to withstand a challenge. That's the way I would read that.
So I saw the UCI president said that Froome presented 1,500 pages of expert evidence, and a few times in the limited statements and reports I've been able to read, on several occasions they talk about a significant number of expert and scientific reports which were submitted on behalf of Mr. Froome. Later on in the process, Mr. Froome then filed his explanation for the abnormal result on the 4th of June 2018, together with significant additional expert evidence. What WADA say is, they say the decision that they've reached is based on a number of factors that are specific to the case of Mr. Froome. So here's where we kind of thought, well, this might be interesting, specific to the case of Mr. Froome. So, one, they say that a significant increase in dose over a short period prior to doping control. So in layman terms, you know, me or you go puffing away pretty close to when we're going into doping control, and that could have adversely affected things. And then two, demonstrated within subject variability in the excretion of salbutamol. So that's what you're getting at when you talk about how In different people, it will be ingested and digested and excreted in different ways. And there's no real way to measure how you might react to salbutamol and how I might react to salbutamol. That's the gist of that.
Yeah. So to the second point, that's the gist. And so there are a handful of studies that have looked at, here's a dose, here's how much appears in the urine.
Yeah.
And they've done that for exercise. They've done that where they've caused dehydration, because there's obviously going to be an effect on what appears in the kidneys and therefore the urine when you are losing fluid during exercise. In very few of those cases did you see an athlete get to the levels that Chris Froome has got. And that was why about 2 months ago, WADA came out and said that they were quite confident in their limits. Turns out that was misplaced confidence, perhaps buried under the weight of 1,500 pages worth of evidence and documentation. But that's the point, is how confident are you that there's not a false positive? And listeners might recall about a month ago, a study came out where a group of pharmacologists had developed a model based admittedly on dogs, in which they reckon that there's about a 15% chance of a false positive. Now, anti-doping cannot stand when there is a 15% chance of a false positive, because what that means is that on 100 people who haven't taken a drug, 15 would fail the test. Now, I don't think that dog study was particularly good. I would hope that it wasn't part of the reason that WADA backed off and the UCI backed off, because I think it was fairly weak and actually almost borderline irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of thinking and the process that they would be going through. And then to your first point, in layman's terms, yes, they're saying that Chris Froome took a big dose just before he had to give the sample, which is a little bit like you're driving home from a night out and you see a police roadblock and you quickly drink the last of the beer in your car just before you have to do the breathalyzer. So that seemed a little bit reckless from an experienced cyclist, but that was apparently their defense. All of this, of course, is speculation, because both the UCI and WADA have drawn a very solid line under this and are not going to disclose any of the facts that led them to their decision. And that's, again, it's just classic lack of transparency of scoring.
Well, yes, that's a good point. And if people are listening and wondering, well, where's all the explanation here? Where's all the science that, for instance, you would love to get your teeth into? We haven't really got that. If you were to sum up the summation today, it's been, they've given us a load of evidence. We've looked at it, and trust us, it's fine.
Well, that's just that you're paraphrasing literally the UCI press release, because, and I'm reading this right now, the UCI understands that there will be significant discussion of this decision. So, in other words, they recognize its impact. Mm. Then they go on, wishes to reassure those involved or interested in cycling that its decision is based on expert opinions, WADA's advice, and a full assessment of the facts. The UCI hopes that cycling world can now turn its focus to and enjoy the upcoming races in the calendar. I mean, if it wasn't so disillusioning, it would be a comedy show, because how can you say you understand the impact this will have and then just say, trust us?
No, yeah.
And by the way, enjoy the cycling.
Yeah,
there's no way that most people who follow the sport can enjoy the sport, given what has happened here and the way that it's happened, whether or not Froome is innocent or not.
Yeah, they've kind of ruffled our hair and said, don't you worry about this, it's fine, we've got this. There was something else I wanted to ask you about and to see how legitimate a point it is, because this is where I'm significantly out of my depth. So we've talked about the WADA statement regarding the fact that Froome supposedly took a significant dose shortly prior to testing, and also that he demonstrated within subject variability in the excretion of salbutamol, i.e. how his body reacts to it. The interesting thing is, so if you're saying, well, look, I'm Chris Froome and I react to salbutamol in a certain way, then it does talk in the rules generally about being able to test how a body reacts to certain drugs, i.e. in this case salbutamol, in a controlled pharmacokinetic study. I.e., well, okay, Chris, if this is how you react, well, then let's recreate the conditions and you puff away in your salbutamol and we'll do the tests, which seems like a fair, you know, that makes sense to me. However, they're saying here that it was not possible to recreate the unique circumstances. Those unique circumstances include the fact that Froome at the time was apparently ill. Is that acceptable? Are you okay with that? Do you agree that it might not have been possible to recreate those circumstances to test how Froome might have reacted to his inhaler?
I do. I think that it would be very difficult for any elite athletes to recreate the circumstances of competition in a lab later. And so I'm sympathetic to that argument, but I'm not sympathetic to the argument that should be allowed, because the policy literally says that when the athlete triggers an adverse finding for exceeding that amount, they can explain it using this pharmacokinetic test. Mm. But then that standard has been applied in the past. We've had athletes fail the drug test, not just cyclists, cross-country skiers, track and field athletes have fallen foul of this in the past, and they've had to provide a controlled test in order to try and prove their innocence. In many of those instances, that controlled test fails to prove their innocence, and as a consequence, they serve a ban. What seems to have happened here is either they've tried to do the test and failed, or they haven't even bothered to do the test and they've just said, well, it's impossible. And despite that, WADA has almost overlooked point one and then said, well, because you couldn't do it, we accept that and we'll let you off because of the other reason you bring. So it just seems like double standards to me a little bit. I'm completely sympathetic that you probably can't recreate that, but every athlete in history has had to do that, with this exception. And unless there's something in those 1,500 pages that we're not aware of, I don't understand why that would be the case. If I'm an athlete who's served a ban, having tried to recreate and failed this test, I'll be sitting there saying, well, what did we do wrong? Maybe my lawyers weren't good enough.
There will be calls on Froome to publish these 1,500 pages, I would dare say. It'll be interesting to see if he does so. So to go back to something you said initially, you feel that the testing system now is in tatters based on this.
I tweeted that this morning, and I said earlier that a lot of people have responded to this by saying that the salbutamol policy is a joke and needs to be done away with. I don't want to be over dramatic, but I think that there are even broader implications to this, because what anti-doping relies on is two things. Number one is testing. Do the authorities have the ability to detect banned substances in athletes? And then if so, do they have the ability to enforce the sanctions based on the testing? Now, we know, and most people who've got any knowledge of the sport know, that testing is very poor. Mm. It only works in a very small proportion of athletes. Most athletes who dope will never fail a drugs test as long as they're intelligent. But what this particular instance does is it highlights that even at the back end, there are problems with enforcing the sanctions from testing. And that's not unique to salbutamol, lest there be people who are saying that I'm overreacting to a specific case. In the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen the biological passport challenged in the same way. And when the legal challenge is strong enough, it breaks. There was a case of an Irish sprinter called Stephen Colvert, and the only reason he didn't break anti-doping, or in his case, EPO, is because he didn't have the money to do it. And so he eventually took his ban and retired. But his was a case where it was a test for EPO. Some experts said that it was a positive test. Some experts said that it wasn't positive, and they were split. And had he pursued that, I feel that he would have undermined the EPO testing in the same way that this undermined salbutamol. So we have seen in the last decade a number of instances where the anti-doping process is much less robust than people would like it to be. And that's after testing. This is actually on the legal side of it. Mm. And so I think that this Froome decision today is a giant leap in the direction that anti-doping was already going, which is okay. The direction of basically no credibility. People may not have seen that we were on that path, but we were. Classic example, by the way, is how often we debate, what is the scientific evidence that drug X works? Well, there isn't any. So why is it banned? So that's one example. But we were on this path, and this decision today is a giant leap in the direction of much less, to the point of zero credibility for anti-doping. I think it's a very damaging day for the concept of anti-doping.
So in future, if somebody tests positive for, say, for instance, salbutamol, the first thing their lawyers will do will be to crack open the Froome file and say, well, how do you defend this? And there'll be a fairly obvious mechanic for doing that.
And they will say, prove to us that your test is trustworthy. Okay. In other words, that concept of liability, which has always rested on the athlete, once they fail a test, the athlete must show why they failed the test. That concept has now been reversed. Mm. And in future, if the athlete's got enough money and the motivation, because that's the thing, is a lot of times the athlete just doesn't have the capacity, which in itself is interesting because it makes you wonder how many innocent athletes have simply had to take the medicine because they can't fight the legal problems or the credibility issues. But you're right. They would now say, how can we put the liability back? Mm. You you as the authorities, you prove to me that your test is trustworthy and that there's not a 1%, 10%, 15% chance that I'm being falsely accused of doping and a false positive case here. That's the big danger. And I think we were heading in that direction, and we've just taken, as I said, a big step in it.
Yeah, okay. Because it really did seem at the outset like Froome might be behind the eight ball here, you know? He was double the dosage. I mean, what the hell had gone wrong? Like something seriously awry had gone on here. Yeah. He was double the dosage. And in a grim kind of way, if today's hearing had happened and the UCI had said, look, we've taken control of examining his case and he's fine, then you might have thought, well, okay, this is like a Lance Armstrong part two, wink and a nod. It's some kind of corruption within the UCI. It's almost more worrying the fact that the UCI have said, well, look, this has nothing to do with us. This is over to WADA, and this is what they're saying. So the implications are actually far grimmer in broad terms, as you've outlined. But that's where we are.
Yep, and there'll be no challenge to CAS, because that would have to have come from WADA, and they've already basically signed the dotted line on this one. So both parties, UCI and WADA, have just double underlined this, closed the book, and said, "Trust us and enjoy the Tour de France." And again, I mean, maybe it won't happen because it's too costly and too much trouble for someone to go through. But I would worry very much that this creates precedent that reverses the burden, and it starts to put a microscope on all those banned substances. And the frank reality is that most of those banned substances, if challenged, will be exposed as similar to salbutamol. Obviously, it's different being a threshold drug, but this whole thing is a, you know, and you said it in the beginning, it looked like he was behind the eight ball clear cut. The longer it went, the more clear it became that something was up here, because anti-doping is like an old jersey with full of threads, and as long as you pull enough of them, that jersey unravels, and that's what today's shown.
In effect, and in short, you muddy the waters enough so that WADA go, ugh, we don't even really know anymore what to prove or what we can't prove. That's what they've done here.
Okay. Exactly. And it's easier probably for salbutamol than it might be for some other cases. But for me, the concept is the same, is that you can attack the foundation of anti-doping in order to show enough doubt to get away with whatever it is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I suppose maybe one of the interesting questions is just, you haven't seen all the evidence clearly, but is it conceivable, like Chris Froome's statement here is talking about how I understand the history of this great sport, good and bad. I've always taken my leadership position very seriously. I always do the right things the right way. I meant it when I said I would never dishonor a winner's jersey and that my results would stand the test of time. So he is coming out here and saying, I told you, and I told you from the start, and here I am. Vindicated. Is it possible he took the correct dosage and somehow ended over at double? Like, how much of a miracle is this guy? How many miracles can he perform?
Yeah, so that's two separate questions. To answer the first one, it is. Of course, it's possible that he's innocent and that this is legitimately a failed test. It's as possible that it's just a legal thing that a battle that he's managed to win because he threw, as you said, the kitchen sink and every other resource at it. And again, we simply don't know that. And ultimately,
and sorry to interrupt, Ross, does anybody know that? Like, do WADA know that, or is what you're saying here that there's no real way of knowing?
Well, I suspect that no one knows that.
Okay.
I suspect that the waters are now so muddied and it's so murky that I don't think anyone, other than obviously the potential perpetrators of the Doping Act, would know that. Because WADA are basing it on, it's all probabilities. And so the premise of anti-doping is that given this test, there's a 99.9% chance, probably not even, 99% chance that you're doping, therefore you're banned. And what this has done is it's lowered that probability. So now you're saying, okay, it's an 80% chance. But that's not enough for a ban, so therefore you're riding on a 20% chance that you're not guilty. That's basically what it is.
Okay.
They've lowered the probability.
So anti-doping has almost segued into, you know, a jury having to give a verdict beyond all reasonable doubt, and the burden of proof is much more difficult here.
Yes. And the problem is that the only evidence that jury gets is a sample in the urine. That's the big issue that anti-doping faces, is it's all built on this test in order to find a banned substance issue. And the point that I would make, and was trying to make earlier as well, was that what this shows us is that testing, A, hardly catches anyone to begin with. And even when it does, is very fragile and not nearly as robust as it needs to be. So where does that leave us? That leaves us needing more investigation, more whistleblowers, more investigative type work, because then the jury has information. At the moment, the jury's got one piece of information to work on, and that's why you can just throw everything at undermining that information.
Okay.
And that's not a good system.
No, it doesn't sound good, I have to be honest. So Froome, I mean, was risking here a two-year ban, the loss of his Vuelta title. As things stand, he picked up the Giro in May, and now he's looking to win three consecutive Grand Tours. The interesting thing will be what reaction he gets over the next 3 weeks. I suppose we'll see that. But, it just casts a shadow over the whole thing in a big way, doesn't it?
Yeah, massive. I mean, the cynics would say that the shadow was there.
Sure.
And that the credibility was minimal to begin with. But this, as I say, this one feels more disillusioning than many others because of the profile maybe and just because of the manner in which it's developed. 9 months drawn out, week before done. And we just have to take it, you know. So maybe sometimes I think cycling will get the champions it deserves.
Yeah. Dr. Ross Tucker, pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good chatting, as always.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.